You are listening to Mike Seminary and Friends,
a Q1 Network production.
If you have dreams or you're wondering how to make a bigger impact in this world, you're home. Welcome to Mike Seminary and Friends. I'm Deb, Mike's wife. I suggested this idea as a way to keep him busy and out of my way after he retired. So far, it's working. Thanks for listening. It's time for Mike Seminary and Friends.
Welcome to Mike Seminary and Friends, the place where we strive to make a difference, a positive difference, provide you something of value. Heck, from my perspective, we just want to share good stuff. I'm your host, Mike Seminary, and I'm so grateful you've joined us. A big thanks to my friend David Hansen for my theme music, Continental Drift. Search for his work, Serotonin Waters and Moon Dot Soup, on iTunes and Spotify. By the way, I appreciate your comments and guest suggestions. Keep them coming at MikeSeminary.com or Mike Seminary and Friends on Facebook. And please visit us at Apple Podcasts and leave a review. Today, I'm just absolutely thrilled to have as my guest a very gifted athlete that played hockey for my favorite hockey team, UND Fighting Hawks. Then he played professionally, and now he's the new coach for the new Legacy Sabres hockey team in Bismarck, North Dakota. Mario Lamoureux, welcome to Mike Seminary and Friends. Thank you for taking time to join me. It's great to see you. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me on. Excited to chat.
Well, I've been looking forward to this. I've been a hockey fan for a long time, played a little bit as a young guy. So did my brothers. My very first hockey game that I saw was in the old chicken shack, I really want to call it, up at UND, when they had, I think, chicken wire around the ice. It was really, really something. My dad took my brother and I on an airplane ride up to Grand Forks from Fargo to see our first hockey game. And that's, I think it was 1966 probably, and been hooked ever since. And been a, I still call them the Sioux. I've been a UND hockey fan for all those years. And so thanks for being on. It's going to be fun to talk with you today.
Yeah, no, the hockey's a great sport, obviously runs in my blood, and it'll always be the Fighting Sioux to me. I bled it while I was there. I still do to this day, and you know, something that's really something that was so special to be a part of. And it, you know, to be honest, people like you that are passionate about it is what makes it such a great place to play at.
Well, let's first start with your family. I've got it, and you're the middle child, right?
So my brothers are all older, and then my sisters are a year younger. So I'm kind of, I'm one of the middle kids.
Okay. And your father played for UND. You played for UND. Your sisters, I think maybe one of your brothers did. There's got to be a little competition in your family, I would think, because hockey's fairly competitive. And it takes a huge, huge commitment at the level that you played. So kind of as a kid growing up, what was it like for you to be in a, you know, household where your dad played hockey?
It was just very competitive, not just in hockey, but kind of everything, all the sports that we played. And we were in, you know, swimming and soccer and baseball. Obviously, hockey was, I think, all of our favorite sport growing up. But it was just a competitive atmosphere. You go outside and play street hockey, you play the game to win, and it was competitive. You go play, you know, knee hockey in the house and drive your parents insane. You wanted to win. So, you know, whatever it was, we just were competitive with each other. And I think, you know, as I look at myself now, you go play a competitive game, you play the game to win, whatever it is, and you play your hardest. And I think one of the things that my dad and my mom taught me growing up was, if you're going to do something, your effort's going to be the highest that you can give, and nothing less was going to be accepted. And they just expected us to work hard. And if we signed up for something, we saw it all the way through. You didn't necessarily have to play the next year, but if you were going to sign up to play soccer or swimming, you were going to do it till the end of the season, and you weren't going to quit on anything. I think that was a great lesson growing up, was you're going to commit to something, you're going to do it till the end, and then you can kind of reevaluate at the end. And yeah, it was a competitive household. Sometimes, you know, got a little carried away, but I think that's kind of what helped us give us some success later in life.
By the way, I started when I was a student at UND. I was there for 2 years. Last year was 1975. That's when I started running, and I've been running ever since. I bring that up because your mother was very competitive marathoner.
Yep.
I don't know if she still is, but she very, very, very gifted runner.
Yeah, she ran, I think it was 25 marathons. She did the Grandma's Marathon in Duluth. She ran the Boston Marathon, I think, 5 times. So yeah, I don't know how she did it. I look back now and I'm just very kind of in awe that she was able to do that. And this was all while we were in elementary school and middle school. You know, really busy time, but I think that was probably her way to get some stress out from dealing with, you know, a bunch of wild kids, and that was her way to kind of de-stress a little bit. But yeah, I remember growing up, I'd get on my bike and ride alongside her while she was running around town, and I would always tire out before she would, which I look back now, it's crazy to think that she was able to do all that while having 6 kids. So about 6 or 7 years ago, I ran a 5K, and I've never run a competitive race in my life. And I thought, I'm going to do great. I'm an athlete. I can do this. I just got done with my professional season, and I came home and I ran a 5K, and I got smoked, and I got done, and I crossed the finish line. I went up to my mom. I said, "Mom, good for you," because that sucked.
And you're done? It's out of your system, or are you?
I'm not doing it. I have no plans to do any long distance running.
How old were you when you first strapped some skates on your feet? And then how old were you when you knew hockey was really the sport for you?
The earliest I can remember playing competitively was about 4 years old. So I think skates were probably on me at 2 or 3 years old. And ever since I can ever remember, I just loved hockey. I can't even remember a time where hockey wasn't what I wanted to do. I grew up and I wanted to be a hockey player. I wanted to be like my brothers and sisters and the other neighborhood kids around. I don't remember a time where I didn't know convincingly that I wanted to play hockey. It was just always what I wanted.
You started playing was it Century, excuse me, Red River or Central?
So Central, yeah. Grand Forks Central, I played 8th and 9th grade, played for Grand Forks Central.
And then you went into junior hockey. Help me and listeners and followers of Mike Seminary Friends, help me understand how junior hockey works. Because you left your hometown, Grand Forks, to do this, right?
Yep. So if I could compare junior hockey to anything, it would kind of be like going to junior college for a football or baseball player. It's kind of like the next step to get to, you know, Division I college hockey. So in hockey, there's, you know, you're the ages of 16 to 20 years old, and you go play in a junior league in America or Canada. And it's just a higher level than high school hockey, not quite as good as college hockey. And it's kind of that in-between stage. And I guess it would be like a developmental league to get to college hockey. So I moved to Nebraska to play junior hockey to try and pursue a college career.
And how many years were you there?
So I spent 4 years down in Kearney, Nebraska, played for the Tri-City Storm, and which is usually most players that are trying to play Division I hockey, you're going to spend anywhere, you know, most players 1 to 2 years playing junior hockey, the occasional you know, there's a few players that will play 3 years, and then there's the real oddballs that'll play 4 years like me. So I spent a lot of time there, but it was a lot of good memories, had some great people that I was able to be associated with there, and definitely helped me grow up. And, you know, I look back and those are years that I really cherish and helped me kind of get to where I went in the hockey world.
So that's is that like a typical school year? You're there for that period of time and then you're playing hockey at the same time?
Yep. So I was a high school student in Nebraska. So we enrolled at the public school there. And, you know, I was 16 and I went, and there was four other high school kids that were also on the team. You know, we had a kid from Chicago, a couple from California, and we just went to public school, and then we would go to our team practices, and every weekend you're playing games and road trips. So it was, you know, I look back, you know, being a 16-year-old kid at the time, I felt like I was so ready to do that. And I loved it. I never got homesick or anything like that. But it is a big commitment. You know, you're practicing every day, you have long road trips, and you're still in school. So, you know, a lot of times you get home at 4 a.m. and you're expected to be at 8 o'clock class. And, you know, so that part was really challenging, but, you know, lived with a family there that did a good job of making sure, I got to school every morning. It's Dave and Sherry Jorgensen was the family that I lived with, and Sherry would come downstairs, probably have to wake me up twice to make sure I was at class, every time, and I'd get there just in time. So
is that fairly similar to the team that we have in Bismarck?
Yep. So it would be the same concept. So the Bismarck Bobcats would be in the North American Hockey League. Okay. And then where I went was the United States Hockey League, which would be the league above what the Bobcats would be playing in, which would be the United States Hockey League. And that would be considered the top junior league in America.
So prior to that commitment that took you to Nebraska, what was your traveling hockey experience like when you were still living at home in Grand Forks? And for how many years were you doing that?
Yep. So the whole youth hockey in Grand Forks is a lot different now than it was when I was growing up. I played for what was called the Grand Forks Supras growing up, and just we were a traveling team throughout the winter. And then when I got to, I don't know, about 10, 11, 12 years old, you started to get involved in more like spring and summer hockey, playing on some higher level teams. And so I was a lot more a part of that. So we had, what was the Dakota Selects at the time. So I was part of that in the summer. We played on a couple other high level programs growing up in the summer. And that kind of led me into high school. And then I was kind of full-time doing hockey in high school and eventually went on to play juniors after that.
Thanks. You just filled in some gaps for me, because when I was growing up, for the record, I'm older than your folks, my brothers and I, and primarily my middle brother, because the other one is about 9 years younger and had changed by the time he was playing hockey. In fact, growing up in Fargo, and we went through the parochial school system, Shanley didn't have hockey when I was growing up. My youngest brother, and my two brothers both were goalies, I was a defenseman. My youngest brother ended up playing for the team that was finally established at Shanley at that point in time. But back in those days, I don't remember there being much traveling hockey. There were city leagues that we played on. It was all outdoors, of course, because I don't think the Fargo Coliseum was constructed until about 66, 67, maybe somewhere in there. So we always played hockey outside. And the great thing about growing up at that time when Fargo was significantly smaller, there were sheets of ice. Where we live, we had one 150 yards out our front door, and then there was another one about 3 blocks away, and then another one about 6 blocks. There was plenty of ice where you could play. But I just don't remember, Mario, being traveling hockey programs at the time. Do you have any idea when that kind of started?
You know, I'm not exactly sure. I know when I want to say maybe it was 5 or 10 years before I really started to get into it, that it became more of you're traveling around to the different communities within your region to play games. And I mean, now people are traveling all over the country, all over the continent to go play in tournaments. And so, the world has changed quite a bit. You know, travel's easier now. You have easier to get a hold of different people, and it's changed a lot. And I think, which I think in a lot of ways, it's an awesome thing that kids have an opportunity just to have opportunities to go play hockey, you know, in a lot of different, basically any time of the year, you'll have opportunities to go play and you get to meet other kids. And I think from a social aspect, it's good for the development of, you know, young kids to go be in situations that make them a little bit uncomfortable and, you know, helps kids grow up and develop socially. And, you know, maybe you get to go play with kids that are, you know, a level ahead of you. So then that opens your eyes a little bit to, you know, the level of play that is out there beyond just maybe the town that you live in. So I think those things, you know, are an awesome thing about, you know, traveling hockey. And I grew up and I think about the travel teams I got to play in, and I loved it. It was, you get to be with your friends, you get to play the sport that you enjoy playing. And I just loved everything about it. I look back with the best memories of, you know, traveling with your hockey team and being in the hotels and hanging out at the rink. And I just think it was just such a great experience for me. And, something I want all kids to try and have an experience with.
I'm going to ask you a question about discipline, but before I do, did you say the family's name was Jorgensen?
Yes.
Do you still communicate with them?
Yep. So I haven't lived there in, let's see, since 2008, and I still keep in contact with them. With every couple months, we'll exchange messages, and they're just we're a great family and took care of me and, you know, critical parts of my life. And yeah, they were good people. They were one of the first people I called when I decided I was going to be done playing. They were a big part of me growing up, and you know, they were one of the first phone calls that I made when I kind of made that decision.
Yeah. My discipline question is this. It's maybe a two-part question. By the time you went to Kearney, Nebraska, you had already been a pretty disciplined athlete because you've been playing hockey long enough. You've been in the program, and I'm sure there's a lot of influence from your parents. And then just the competitive nature of, you know, your siblings and how competitive you were as a family. When you got to Nebraska, that new level of discipline that in addition to hockey, where schooling was important. And you'd mentioned that sometimes you might get home at 4 a.m. and at 8 o'clock you had to be back in class. How significant were the Jorgensens in kind of replicating a mom and dad for you in terms of helping you stay focused and staying on track and being as disciplined as a student as you needed to be a disciplined athlete? How important was that?
It was huge for me. You know, it would have been really easy for me to sleep in on those days when you don't want to get up. And I think just being a high level athlete, discipline is such an important thing, not just in your sport, but, you know, every part of your life has to have discipline for you to, you know, if you want to move up the ladder to play at a high level one day. And, you know, they allowed me to be a kid, and they, you know, I was a responsible kid at that age. But they were great at guiding me and making sure that when, you know, if I got home a little late one night, you know, they were making sure, hey, let's try and be on time. Don't be, cause we had a team curfew and whatnot. And, you know, I would hang out with the other guys on the team sometimes, and they just wanted me to make sure I was following what the guidelines were for the team. And just making sure I was taking care of myself so that it would allow me to have success on the ice, allow me to do well in school. And I think it's important to have, you know, a role model or a mentor or just someone looking out for you, making sure that you're staying on track. Because I think as a teenager, that's a, you know, as disciplined as someone could be at that age. I thought I was very disciplined. You still need to get back on track sometimes, you know, because teenagers are teenagers. And, you know, I was no different than anyone else. But yeah, they played a huge role in my development as a growing up into a young man. And, you know, really thankful to have had that experience.
So from there, you end up playing for, if not the most, you know, storied hockey program in the country at UND. It's clearly in a small handful that are the best over decades. You get to UND and you take it to another level. I've always been curious about this because when I was an athlete, even when I was a competitive martial artist in the late 70s, really early 80s, nobody paid attention to their diet. We'd eat junk like you're a kid, right? How important was diet for you at that level when you were at UND and then when you started your pro career?
That's a great question. So when I went to UND, I always had the intentions of trying to be disciplined with what I was eating. And when I was like, even when I was a 16-year-old, I went and, you know, people like, oh, you got to rehydrate, drink Gatorade. So I would drink like 4 Gatorades a day thinking that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing and not realizing you don't need to be drinking 4 Gatorades a day, you know? So I think my intentions were always really good as far as like, I'm attempting to do the right things, but I think my education on trying to put the right things in my body wasn't the greatest through juniors. And even in college, like you attempted to eat the right things to give yourself a chance. And then I think when I left after college and my first year pro, I bought a little book called Secrets of Nutrition or something. And I started to go through this book and I said, you know what, maybe I'm eating the wrong things. And I really focused on trying to eat better. And I went from like eating a ton of carbs, you know, all game day to, you know what, I need to get more, and the simplest way to put it is I added more vegetables into my life and try to do smoothies and just get things that were more nutritious. Cause you can get that energy from, you know, healthier food. I don't need to eat a pound of pasta, which is kind of what they say. Oh, it's game day. Yeah, I have a bunch of pasta. And I just think that, I replaced that with maybe potatoes or, you know, a option that was, I felt going to make me better. And I actually probably lost, you know, 3 or 4 pounds, which for my weight, that was a good amount for me to lose. And I will say I got about halfway through the season and I was the best I'd ever felt on the ice. And basically committed, was trying to be disciplined with everything that I put in my body so that I would feel good. When you're playing pro hockey, you're playing, you know, maybe 80 plus games a year, playing 3 to 4 games a week with tough travel. And I think an advantage I had was I really tried to take care of myself nutritionally. And it gave me that energy on a Sunday when you've just played Friday, Saturday, and you got to play Sunday afternoon. You know, I felt I'm ready. And things got me ready for each game, but the nutrition was a huge part in me, I think, really having a successful pro career. Cause I went from a kind of a depth college player to go to pro. And then I, you know, had that energy every single game to have success. And then eventually led to, you know, more success professionally and played a huge role in how I felt from game to game.
I'm going to ask you a couple questions. It just occurred to me as you were talking. Is the Ralph one of the best facilities you ever played in?
It's not even close. It's you go there and you know that it's nice. You know that you're playing in a great rink, and then you kind of go outside and you go all over the world and go to all these rinks, and then you realize like, wow, it really is like the best rink, you know? And when I was there, it was the best facility. And then a couple of years after I left, they redid the whole locker room and now it's 10 times better than it was before. And, you know, it is top notch.
Yeah. Another question that occurred to me actually during my run this morning, did you and your father both play with a Chorney?
No, my older brother played with Taylor Chorney, and then my dad would have played with Mark. Okay. So I missed Taylor by, I think I missed him by 1 year, but my older brother would have played with him.
Okay. So you play at UND, you're on great teams, and you become a professional. And you really traveled the globe in a lot of different ways. My first question is this. When you were in Europe, what were some of the most significant positive memories that you'll take with you the rest of your life playing professional hockey over in Europe?
When I look back at all the places I went to Europe and I think about the memories, I actually think what I really remember, like you go to museums and see all this stuff, but kind of what I remember was our interactions with a lot of the locals that, you know, showed a lot of kindness to us. You know, we're a foreigner in their country. And I think when you come from America, you just don't have we're kind of in our own bubble. And then, you know, we go to someone else's country and they accept you as one of their own. And like we went to Germany this last year and it was in the middle of COVID and we're kind of like quarantined at the hotel. And there was a family that we were at their hotel and they like took care of us like they were our own kids. And were so kind to me and my family. And like that's kind of what I remember. We went to Norway. So we got a few days off and there was actually a family that lived in Grand Forks that lived in Bergen, Germany. So we went to visit Bergen for a couple days and they kind of took us around the city and we got to experience, you know, this lifetime opportunity and you got to do it with someone that was showing you around and knew the area. And like, that's what I remember about it was like the time with the people that are from those areas that is really memorable for us and it has nothing to do with hockey. You know, it was just a great memory. Here you go. We got to take a trip to Italy. We had a couple days off. So we went to a town in Verona and we had no idea where we were. We just stopped at this little pizzeria and had no idea what to do. And they snuck a little table in for us. And the waitress was like super nice to us and telling us about the city and gave us like just such a cool experience. And like that, those are some of the things that I really remember was other people's kindness and other people's, you know, generosity with their time and trying to make us feel comfortable in their own country. And those would be some really memorable things that really stick out to me.
On the teams that you played for, the European teams, how many of your teammates were from the States?
It depended on the country, but usually some years it was almost six or seven Americans or Canadians. A couple years it was two or three. And then there was one season where I was the only one. And that was definitely a challenging, but great experience to go through that. So it kind of varied from year to year. Every country was a little bit different with how many imports they would allow on the team.
I like the way you say that, imports they allow on the team. What was the language barrier like for you?
For the most part, there wasn't much on the team. For the most part, everyone spoke English. So that, and generally the coach would speak in English. So that part was never challenging. You could always communicate with people. You know, some of the guys on the team would speak better English than others, but for the most part, you could communicate with everybody. I would say the 1 year that was challenging for me is I was in Switzerland and I was the only American guy on the team. And everyone there speaks English, but when you're the only American, they're not going to speak English within the room. The coach, for the most part, spoke in what would be Swiss German. And that was a really challenging time. And it taught me a lot about the importance of communication and just being aware of, like, there might be someone, even like now, you can might have one kid in the room and he just doesn't quite understand. Or, you know, when you're in a team with a bunch of languages, how important it is to make sure everyone feels welcome on that team. You know, I look back at a lot of experiences of playing with different people that, you know, maybe you could have got more out of them if they had felt more comfortable within the locker room, but there's that barrier of language or barrier of something of how I remember how it made me feel. And no one was trying to be, you know, leave me out or anything, but you got four guys speaking German and having a conversation. I can't sit and listen in. So you're kind of by yourself a little bit. So it was a great, it was challenging, but I will say it was maybe one of the best experiences to go through because it taught me a lot about communication and the importance of inclusion. You know, when you have a group of people and a lot of, and they're different. So it was a, maybe one of the most valuable experiences I had as a playing pro hockey.
So you, you play for 8 years. Is that right?
Nine seasons. Yep.
How many of them were in Europe?
Six. So I had three in North America. And then the last six were all in Europe.
What was the greatest frustration for you, during that period of time?
You know, you leave college and you're trying to make a career for yourself, as a hockey player. So your success, you know, each season is, and for me, I was always on a 1 year contract. So the urgency to play well was always there. And you look around the world, you know, of different hockey players and they're getting opportunities to play for teams that, you know, are in better leagues or they're making more money. And I would say there's definitely a level of frustration to look at someone else and say, I've proven myself more than that person and they're getting maybe a better opportunity. That was always something that bugged me, but at the same time, it also motivated me. And, you know, you go and see a guy sign on for a team that you feel like you could have, you know, easily been on, and it kind of jacks you up a little bit and said, you know what, I just got to put my my bootstraps on and I'm going to go to work and try and get better. I'm going to go prove some people wrong and, you know, I'm going to go earn my way. And if the opportunity isn't right now, I'm going to try and make it the opportunity next time. And that was definitely a level of frustration, but at the same time, I think also motivated me to want more for myself and was no other person that could go change that other than myself. And it couldn't, wasn't going to be, you know, someone else putting in all this work for me. I had to go do the work and put it in myself and, you know, look back and we'll say, I feel like I definitely put the hours in, put the sweat in, and it was tough, but no, I loved every second of it.
How's your body? I mean, hockey's pretty darn physical. How's your body?
For the most part, I will say in, let's see, 17 years of junior college and pro hockey, I've never had a significant injury. Stayed healthy for the most part. I have my nicks and bruises that affect me a little bit, but for the most part, stayed healthy. You know, I got some sore joints and stuff like that, but I really was focused on taking care of my body, training wise, nutritionally, obviously, like we talked about. And I think that was a reason that I was able to stay healthy and be done playing and still feel good. So yeah, overall, I would say I feel pretty good still.
Where along that time frame were the nine seasons that you played, did you establish Lamoureux hockey? And then I'm going to ask you how you made the decision to focus some of your energy out in the western part of the state. When did you start that?
Yep. So I moved to Biz. So my wife and I were getting married in 2015 and I was off playing at the time. I was in Illinois and she got a job in Bismarck, which is where she's from. And once she was done with school, and then she kind of told me that I needed to move out to Bismarck. And I said, well, what the heck am I going to do in Bismarck? And then I just kind of got more involved with the youth hockey in this area. And we kind of started Lamoureux hockey, started off with just kind of a couple little camps, and it's kind of developed into quite a bit more. And I, you know, that first year I was here, I said, you know what, if I'm going to do this, I want to be involved. I want to help. I want more kids to play hockey. I want more kids to enjoy the sport. And if you're going to enjoy the sport, typically you're better at it. So I said, let's try and provide some structure for these kids to get better. And, you know, it seemed like every year do a little bit more. Someone makes a call and says, would you mind helping with this? Or would you put this on or that? And I said, I don't think I've ever said no. So But yeah, it's grown quite a bit, and we're mostly in like Bismarck Mandan area. We go to Watford City. I've been to a lot of other small communities, just trying to help get their programs, you know, a little bit more developed and provide a little knowledge for their players and coaches. And something I've really never planned to really do, that was never the plan. But I've really grown to love it, and I just have a ton of feel a ton of passion. I feel a lot of responsibility to try and help a kid do what I was able to do, and hopefully more. I think that would be my kind of, I guess right now it feels like my life goal, to try and get a kid to hopefully be the captain of UND one day. That would be pretty cool.
Well, I got to think, Mario, that between your own family and then your junior hockey career, your career at UND, your professional career, if you were a note taker, I don't know, you've had a lot of coaches where you've been able to learn from all of them and then take that information, process it, and now and then on your own experiences as a player, you got to think that you've got to be just a gift for a lot of kids, I would think, because of this unique experience and background that you have.
Yeah, I would when I kind of look at my career and I look at what I'm doing now, over the course of my hockey career, I was in probably almost every role you can be within a team. I was on the first line power play and like the guy everyone looked to be the best player. I was second line, third line. I was the fourth line or fifth line, which fifth line means you're not playing. And, you know, and those experiences, like I know the emotions of going into each role. So I find that part valuable. Like I can look at a kid on the bench and I can maybe understand what he's feeling, like, hey, he just got skipped over on a shift, or, you know, something happened within the game. He made a mistake. Like I understand how that feels. And I know that it can be, each role has its challenges emotionally. So I think that part is really beneficial. And then just looking at all of the different coaches I had, you know, so I played it a lot for a lot of different teams in my pro career. I don't know if it was probably had, you know, 15, 16, 17 coaches, something like that. Some of them were awesome and some of them I didn't care for as much, that I felt like maybe didn't do the best job as a coach. But I will say, looking at maybe what they did negatively, and I thought, you know what, if I was a coach, that's something I don't want to do. You know, that's something I didn't find effective. That wasn't a productive way to do something. So even those maybe negative experiences actually helped me be a better coach, helped me understand how I can communicate with a kid that's six or a kid that's 18, and just kind of understanding the whole psyche of what it means to be an athlete. And I think that part is really beneficial, you know, for what I'm doing now. And then just, I think if there's one thing I've really learned, if you want to be an effective coach, you got to be all in for the kids. You got to have the passion for the kids. You have to want them to get better. And I never want to show up to the rink and just put my time in. Like I want to be solely dedicated to, like, we're going to be on the ice for an hour and we're going to get the most out of every second that we're out here. And this is an important hour of your life to be a better hockey player and learn how to work hard. And I think that would be one thing I always try to do when I do, you know, whether you're coaching a six-year-old or coaching the high school team, you want the kids to feel it from you. When they can feel that energy from the coach, the kids will have more energy. And, you know, you get to know these kids and you see how hard some of them work, and you just want it for them so bad. And I think the coaches I played the hardest for were coaches that I could feel it from. You know, I could feel them want it for me. And it didn't mean they were always my best friend, but I always try to, you know, give the kids everything I got to try and help them get better. And, you know, hopefully people around here have I guess, like that about me. I try to give basically all my effort as a coach, much like I did as a player.
Well, speaking of coaching, so this year, Legacy High School, Legacy Sabres, will have their first hockey season. Were you part of any of the initial conversations when the plan to make this the first season, were you part of any of those discussions?
No, I wasn't part of anything as far as like them wanting to start the program. I know when they decided to have a program, or once I knew that they announced that they were going to have a team, then I inquired after about potentially being the coach for the team.
And you got that. You're going to be the coach of the very first team. The first day of practice, I think you told me it was November 8th or something, if I recall.
Yep.
Obviously, at present, you don't necessarily know what talent is going to be part of that first day of practice. But you must have a sense of some of the talent if some of them might have been through Lamoureux hockey camps, or is that not accurate?
There would be a good chunk of kids that I've had over the years, you know, some as recent as this summer or some dating back, you know, 2, 3, 4 years ago. I've had quite a few of them. So I got a pretty good idea of the makeup of our team. You know, I haven't been involved with as much high school hockey or know, you know, all the different programs to maybe know how we'll stack up, but you know, but we should be a solid group. So we'll see how things shake out.
Gosh, I would think so. It's a big school, a lot of students. Hockey has really become a big sport in Bismarck Mandan. I mean, who was it that won the first state champion? Peluso. Peluso was the coach, right?
Yeah, it would have been 8, 9 years ago, maybe.
Yeah. Has there been a second? Or is
nope.
That the only?
I think that was the only one that Bismarck's ever had.
Yeah, I think you're right, 7 or 8 years ago. And so I would think it's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of talent, and your life's about to change again.
Yep. So it'll be, you know, it's a large undertaking, but I'm kind of excited for the challenge. It'll be, you know, something that's new to me. And, you know, I guess kind of what I was just saying before is I guess I want those players to know I'm all in and, you know, we have a goal in mind of what we want to do, and let's chase it. Let's go. Let's put everything on the table. One thing for me is when I knew when I was done with the season or done with the game, you know, or done with my career, I never wanted to look back and feel like I left effort on the table. You know, I've never looked back at any time I went and worked really hard and said, man, I really regret that. You know, I look back and say, man, I'm really glad I put everything into it. You know, and I can look back at what I did as a hockey player and, you know, you don't have any regrets. And I want all the, you know, those high school kids to feel that too, that let's lay it on the line. And, you know, if it doesn't work out, we did what we could and get your work boots back on and let's go to work.
You know, let me ask you this question with regard to ice time. Our youngest daughter, who graduated from NDSU, by the way, is waiting to become a policeman in Fargo.
Okay.
She was a synchronized figure skater. You've been here long enough to know that Bismarck has a very, very competitive synchronized skating program, one of the best in the country. And ice time was always a problem. I think a lot of the girls ended up skating at 5 in the morning, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere in that area. So now with with the hockey programs that are already there, the synchronized figure skating teams that are there, and now a new high school program, what will ice time be like starting November 8th?
We, with the 3 boys high school teams and the girls high school team, we kind of essentially rotate morning practices. So we'll have 6 a.m. practices, which I think only ends up being, off the top of my head, I don't know if it's maybe 8 times during the year or something like that. So not a significant amount of early practices, but enough to know you got to get up early. And so, yeah, it'll kind of be a rotation of kind of, I think how they've done in the past is kind of go rink to rink each week. And we'll kind of rotate through the morning practices, which I don't think anyone desires to go practice at, you know, 6 a.m. But with the shortage of ice time, that's kind of what the options are. And my thing is, your circumstances, they are what they are, and let's go make the most of them. We don't need to complain. Hopefully the ice time shortage around town will hopefully improve by the addition of another rink, which I think hopefully is happening soon. Yeah. But for right now, you don't have it. So, you know, I'm not going to complain about it. I might complain to my wife that I got to get up for a 6 a.m. practice, but the circumstances are what they are. And just we'll go to practice when they tell us when our time slot is, and we'll make the most of the situation.
Yeah. I brought it up only as an observation. But now I'll dig it into it just a little bit. Compared to a Fargo or a Grand Forks, and I don't know how many sheets of ice they have collectively in either one of those cities, but should Bismarck Mandan have at least one or two more?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, with the volume of hockey players that, or even over the last, since I've been here, the amount of people playing hockey has gone up quite a bit. I don't know the exact numbers off the top of my head, but you know, it's got to be 20, 30, 40% more kids playing hockey. And you absolutely need another sheet of ice. You know, it was, especially during that winter season, you know, your youth levels aren't getting on the ice as much as they should when you compare it to a Grand Forks or a Fargo, from my knowledge. You know, I know Grand Forks, town of that population, and I think Grand Forks has this is 8 or 10 ice sheets, you know, and it's quite a bit smaller than Grand Forks. But yeah, no, they definitely need another sheet of ice. It kind of shocks me that, you know, state capital and with the popularity of hockey in the area, at least from my view, it's surprising me that it hasn't been a priority to try and get a sheet up, you know, 2-3 years ago. So hopefully that's something that will happen sooner than later. And yeah, it's something the community needs, and I hope that things move along quickly.
Not to belabor this, but I think you just said Grand Forks has 8 or 10. In Bismarck, do we have 3?
4. There's 4.
There's 4 now. Okay.
Yeah.
And by the way, figure skating is still exploding. Hockey. Mm-hmm. And once Legacy has their first season, that will add to the popularity of the sport. More kids will want to play because it's kind of like build it and they will come. Here, if you establish it, there will be a draw. That will be a draw for more kids to want to play. So I agree with you that more sheets of ice are critically important. Now, before I leave that, let me ask you this question. When you have Lamoureux Hockey, your camps, you have to you're a competitor then too for ice time, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I guess I was, since I came into town, typically we do our stuff at the Mandan facility, right off the interstate. So I would say I think anyone around town knows that I spend a good amount of hours on the ice, coaching various things. And, but yeah, so I would say in the non-hockey season, I would say I spend quite a bit of time on the ice and providing different programs. So we'll have, you know, in the spring, we'll have done traveling teams, and we do a 3-on-3 league. And then in the summer, we'll have different camps. And we keep the rink busy for pretty much the whole spring, summer, and fall. So this year would be kind of the first year that we've really gone into the fall, because I was typically gone to Europe by the time August started, but now we're kind of really trying to provide as many quality high-end programs for the kids in this area as we can. And we'll continue to do that moving forward.
How should people that have an interest in Lamoureux Hockey, how should they reach out to you or follow you? Do you have a website or Instagram?
Yep. So if you would just go to lamoureuxhockey.com or on Instagram or Facebook, we follow Lamoureux Hockey. And we'll always have promotions and discounts for various things for all the programs that we provide. You know, usually we get the information out a few months before before each event starts and allow people to kind of sign up. And it's been, you know, the last couple of years, we've kind of hit the max on what we can take in. And, you know, hopefully people have found value in what we've provided. And we just, you know, everything I've done, I've, you know, we don't just slap a program together to just throw it out there. There's a purpose behind everything that I've tried to put together, whether it's a team or a certain, you know, specialty camp. It's always been something that I've gone through in my career that I felt was beneficial to me as a hockey player, and we try to structure it in that way. So if you want to go work on stick handling, well, this is what made me a better stick handler. We're going to provide, you know, all the same structure that I feel will help the kids be better stick handlers. So,
So lamoureuxhockey.com?
Yes.
LAMOUREUX.
Yep.
Hockey.com.
It's a tongue twister. So
it was tricky for me. That's for sure.
I know. Yeah. It's a tough one.
I have seminary. People are always asking me, how do you spell seminary?
Yep.
Let me ask you this question. If you had a magic wand, you could wave over the head of, I'm going to say, young kids, more than likely, who are considering, I want to play hockey like Mario did. Listen, they're real young. I want to play hockey at a significant level like Mario. What's the one thing you'd want them to know?
If there's one thing I would want them to know is how hard it is to make it to a high level of hockey. It's the amount of work that you have to put in to be elite is, you know, you have to be willing to do what someone else is not willing to do. And I think my mindset when I was training or when I was skating, getting ready for the season, especially as a professional, my mindset was always, there is someone in Europe, there is someone in Canada, there's someone in the United States that's at the rink or at the gym at the exact same time I am, and am I going to work harder than them? And for me as a professional, like when I was in college, you had a lot, your whole team that you were training with. When I came to Bismarck, I trained by myself for the most part, and I kind of challenged myself. I'd go to the gym and I would, you know, in my head, I would think, I have to outwork someone else that's out there today. You know, you get on the treadmill or you're lifting your weights, and I say, I gotta push myself harder than that guy in Europe that wants my job. And I think what I would want kids to know is you need to have that mindset that someone else is out there trying to be better than you are. They're trying to take your spot. They want that spot on the team that you have, that they want to make the AAA team. You know, are you willing to do what they are not? And I think that's what I would want a kid to wake up that says, hey, I want to be a hockey player, and just be all in on it. You know, don't say, you know what, I'm going to show up to the rink and work really hard just at the rink. You need to work hard kind of 24 hours a day, and you go back to that discipline. You know, are you going to get up and eat a Pop-Tart, or are you going to get up and eat a banana? You know, so like, are you disciplined all day long to be the best player, the best athlete that you can be? Can you do that? Can you be disciplined enough to do that? And I think, you know, if kids have that mentality, they're going to see a lot of improvement. And now you've left everything on the table. You've done what you can to be the best player that you could. And, you know, hopefully it works out. It might not, but at least you can be done at the end of the day and say there wasn't an ounce of effort, there wasn't an ounce of discipline left on the table.
Mm-hmm. That's great advice. So now I'm going to twist that question and ask it a different way. Same magic wand, but you're going to wave it over the heads of the parents of those very kids that you just gave that advice to. What do you want the parents to know or hear from you?
I think that's a good question. I think for the parent, you know, I have my own kids, and I look, you know, go put them in a athletic program of some kind. Do you do your research on what you're putting your kids in? Who is coaching? Who's guiding my kids? You know, you could sign up for a big, huge program that has a big name, but who's the person that's actually interacting with your child? And I think if you're a parent, and you found that person, let them, just like trust them with the structure that they're going to have. When if you found someone good, you got this amazing soccer coach, and he's putting his, you know, all of his effort into trying to make these kids better soccer players. Trust, you know, trust the people that are guiding your kids. Don't, you know, I, for the most part, haven't had to any too many parent problems or anything like that, but, you know, allow your kids to go out and have success, and don't be that like watchful, constant watchful eye on your kid. Allow your kid to be the kid and go out and compete, and he can look at his coach and be all in and, you know, follow that guiding light that they have in front of them.
You know what, Mario Lamoureux? I think legacy Sabre hockey players are in good hands. There's a 33-year-old guy. I think you're 33.
Yep.
That has you and your family are kind of like the Mannings, the Peyton and Eli and their dad. You've got this incredible family experience in hockey at so many levels. You personally have had an incredible career from when you first stepped those skates on as a four-year-old until just recently completing nine seasons at the professional level. You've had Lamoureux hockey camps for 7 years, and now you're going to be the coach of the very first season for the Legacy Sabres. I think the kids are in for a wonderful learning experience. You bring so much to the table. It's going to be fun watching this first year and then the next and those beyond. I think it's going to be a riot. I think that this is going to be fun. They're going to be competitive right out of the chutes. And not that there won't be some challenges. It's the first year, for heaven's sakes. But I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're doing it. And I don't think they could have made a better decision, Mario, than having you as the first head coach.
Well, I hope that the kids will have a positive experience. You want them to enjoy the game, and I know that you know, myself and the rest of the staff will try and do our best to give them every chance to get better. And, you know, hopefully at the end of the season we can look back and say, hey, we had some good success. And I'm really looking forward to it. I think it'll be a lot of fun, and I'm excited to be part of the community full time. It's a community I've really grown to really love. You know, I came here for the first year or two and said, I don't know if I'll last. And now I don't ever see myself leaving. So,
well, by the way, winters are a little nicer here, aren't they, than in the Valley?
You know, Bismarck winters are tough, but there is nothing like a Grand Forks winter. I'll tell you what, there's nothing to January and February walk into class on UND campus. Nothing is quite that brutal.
Speaking from experience, I couldn't agree with you more, Mario. Hey, thank you so much for joining me today. It was really a pleasure meeting you. I appreciate your time. And again, I think Legacy Sabres are in good hands, Mario.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you having me on. It was fun to reminisce a little bit.
It was a pleasure. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you for joining us today. You are profoundly appreciated. Where would I be without the team at Q1 Network?
Anna DeVere, Ashley Harris, Bo Hastings, and Marlo Anderson. And my wife, Deb. Deb really orchestrates all of this for me. I have an incredible wife, partner, and friend. Thanks again for listening to Mike Seminary and Friends. Until we chat again, love y'all.